Welcome to Mysterious Universe, Season 28, Episode 9. Coming up on the show, we've got the Penturk cover-up, Earth's Secret War, and when your spirit guide bombs Gaddafi and crashes the stock market. I'm Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright.
Aren't spirit guides normally benevolent? Don't they help people?
No.
Why are they bombing? What did you say, Gaddafi?
Yeah, Gaddafi gets bombed.
What?
The stock market crashes. I'm talking about the Chronicles of Meonia.
Oh, the follow-up
to the follow-up to the story of the Green Stone.
You're right. Yes. Yeah. So we had the Green Stone, and then we had the Eye of Fire, and now we have the new book, which tells us what happened in the following years after the incident that occurred at the Eye of Fire.
It's from Giuseppe La Rosa, who was with the initial investigations, and the Green Stone was this epic story of vision questing in England, a group of psychics who got together because they're all having the same visions of some future event, and they ended up going following their psychic information and finding a loose brick under a bridge that had a sword inside it. And this led to some other castle where they also found like a bell, which led to another thing. When eventually they found a green.
They get attacked by a tulpa, okay?
They get attacked by a giant bird, and then they fight a tulpa in the second book. And the third book is written by this guy who was with them on the all these expeditions.
Yeah.
And I started reading it on the last Plus show and was quite frustrated. I only got 50% through. And I said to the audience, I said to you guys, if it's good, I'll do it on the next show. And I'm definitely doing it on the next show to
Fantastic.
This show.
Okay. So that's coming up in our Plus extension later in the show.
That would mean that it's a good story.
Yeah, obviously. Well, I know that you got shook down by the Tandoori Mafia earlier this week, so you're feeling a bit better?
You see, that could also be the reason of why I'm doing this book, because I got struck down by the Tandoori Mafia. I've had food poisoning ever since Tuesday night. And maybe it's the case that I came to work today and I've just been sick and throwing up and gross all week that I didn't have time to do anything else. So that could also be why we're doing this story in Plus. It might not have anything to do with the fact that it's a good story. It could be that.
We know it's a good story because you were yelling out some tidbits of the story to me today. And I'm actually looking forward to getting into that in our Plus extension of the show. But for the start of the show, for the first section of this show, I want to talk about this incident. It's called the Penturk Incident. It's the greatest UFO cover-up of modern times. It's by Kaz Clark and Gary Jones. And I don't know how we missed this, Ben, but this is a truly incredible encounter that has come out of Wales.
Is this legit? This is 2016,
right? This is 2016 that this took place. And I'll give more of the exact details in a moment as we get into it. But the reason why I got here is because we were talking about it at the end of the last Plus show. And I was saying, I've just got this feeling. There's something that I can't shake, that there's something not right about the ufological narrative that we're getting at the moment. There's just something that feels off. And the fact that, you know, you've got the Tic Tac UFO footage coming out, you've got the US military or the US government now admitting that there are things that are possibly off-world that we don't understand. It's all like, it all feels a little bit too convenient. And I started to think about it. The reason why it occurred to me is because I've got two young children. And with my kids, whenever they start getting close to something that I don't want them to touch, I'll bring out something. I'll bring out like a car, or I'll bring out something shiny and distract them. I'll get them away from it.
I see what you're saying.
And I can't help but feel that exactly the same thing is happening when it comes to ufological phenomena.
It's a bit of a diversion.
I think it is. Because look, UFOs have been obviously a hotly debated topic for 70 years now, more than 70 years, this stuff. I mean, obviously UFOs have been with humanity for a lot longer than that, but 70 years really is the modern ufological, you know, era. And why is it that all of a sudden, after so many years, that the government would just turn around and go, oh, no, it's okay. There's something odd and gone, and start feeding this information to people. I think it's a distraction. I think it's being done on purpose, and it's working because I can see it. It's creating mainstream media attention for this stuff. I can see, you know, like, you know, Corbell has been appearing on mainstream news outlets, which is great. You know, like, he's doing a really good job in revealing that. But it's like, you're getting normies waking up to this stuff. And I'm like, well, what are they distracting from? Is there something deeper going on here? And I think there actually is.
Well, it's kind of the argument is that they're able to, by replacing the name UAP with, you know,
the change
from UFOs,
the language.
It's like they're structuring the narrative, they're changing, controlling the language, and they're essentially forming their own story.
Yes.
And when you say normies get kind of catch wind of the reality of the UFO phenomenon, they start to absorb the narrative that's been formed.
Narrative.
And whether that's the true situation or not is, I guess, what you're debating.
Absolutely. And I don't think it is. I don't think it is the true nature of it because they've never told us the truth before. They've never told us the truth before. I mean, look at Roswell. Roswell's a really great example. I know it's an old case. I know that it's been beaten to death like a dead horse. But in saying that, it's always the initial details about Roswell that have always grabbed me because straight up, you know, there's that photograph of the material being shown and saying, look, you know, something odd has crashed out here. And then all of a sudden, within a day, it was changed to, oh, no, it's a weather balloon. Like everything was suddenly shut down. Everything was changed so rapidly. Why is it now that they just suddenly start coming forward and freely giving out information as to what's going on? There's something else happening. And so in light of that, I want to talk about this Penturk incident that was experienced by Kaz Clark. So Gary Jones, he is a ufological investigator who is connected with the Swansea UFO Mutual Network. It's kind of like the Wales MUFON network. But all of this started a lot longer ago than this. So even though this incident happened in 2016, I want to set the scene for you about the unusual activity that has taken place throughout Wales for well over 100 years. Like we're talking 120 years or so, that there's been strange phenomena. Now, there's been like airships that have been sighted, odd airships that have been seen. There's been rocket-like craft that have been seen throughout, you know, the last 100 years across the UK.
What about the Welsh Triangle?
There's the Welsh Triangle. There's a lot of weird ufological activity that has taken place. But back in 1909, the UK was hit with this wave of nighttime encounters of what you would term to be UFOs. But obviously, being 1909, it's difficult to describe exactly what they are. People would say, well, I saw something odd in the sky. And a lot of the time, people were saying, oh, it was a strange cigar-shaped object that was passing. You know, there was an example from Cambridgeshire that was reported by Brett Holman. Well, Brett Holman, you know, was reporting on it many, many years later. But this was coming from police officers that were seeing this kind of stuff. So it wasn't just even the general populace that were seeing things, even though they were. You've got credible reports coming from respected members of the community saying, I'm seeing something very, very strange. And multiple incidences of this took place. But there's this one story that really stands out that comes from a Mr. C. Lethbridge. Now, you may recall this case, Ben, but with Lethbridge, he was traveling to his Cardiff home. So this is down on the Welsh coast. And as he was traveling through the mountainous region, he said he was astonished by coming around the corner to find this sight of a cigar-shaped vehicle, is the way he described it, that was sitting on the grass at the edge of a mountain road. And he was shocked to see this, as you would be. Even today, I'm sure if you came around, you know, a mountainous corner and you found some weird cigar-shaped object just sitting there, you would find it to be quite bizarre. But he said, I was surprised to see this long tube-shaped affair on the grass on the roadside. There were two men busily engaging in something nearby, but I wasn't quite sure what. They attracted my close attention because of their peculiar getup. They appeared to have big, heavy fur coats and fur caps fitting tightly over their heads. I became rather frightened. I continued to go on until I was within 20 yards of them. And he said my idea of their clothing was confirmed. And they certainly were odd. And what he describes is that, yes, they looked like they were humans. They had obviously a standard kind of human look to them. But he said they were jabbering furiously at each other in some strange lingo. It was, he said, maybe it was Welsh, but it's like he wasn't sure, but he said it definitely wasn't English. And as soon as he got close, these two men jumped into like the gondola that was underneath this cylinder.
Yeah, I remember this.
And
case.
It took off into the sky, yeah. Pulling this little carriage suspended from it. And as it took off into the sky, like many of the strange airship sightings that were happening, you know, throughout the UK, throughout Texas around that time, we've got the 1890s where you had these reports, and in the early 1900s, it moved in this odd zigzagging fashion, and it had these two brightly powered electric lamps shining down from it. Now, of course, when you hear reports of these electric lamps, from a modern perspective, it doesn't seem like it's a big deal. It's like, oh, well, so what if you've got this bright lamp coming? The type of technology that we have today obviously wasn't available back then. So for you to be able to get these bright electric lamps, it's almost impossible back then. It's just, it wasn't heard of. So it suggests that this was some type of advanced technology. And clearly the fact that this seemingly is a, you know, self-propelled airship of some kind that's flying off, obviously it's an advanced technology of some kind. Now, ufological researcher David Clark has looked into Lethbridge's story, And because there have been obviously a lot of claims at the time that this guy was a hoaxer and this was made up and this was an outrageous story that was even, I think the term that was used was yellow journalism at the time because it was, you know, like a puff piece that was put in into newspapers. But he's like, no, he actually found reports that came from the exact same date from the Cardiff docks where he found reports of people that were working there at around 1 a.m. when they were taking their supper break, seeing an airship flying over the docks. So this would have been, you know, a couple of hours after Lethbridge had had his experience. So it seems like they weren't connected in any way. So to have these independent reports, they kind of validate each other. That there was something odd that was seen over the skies of Cardiff that evening. And, you know, ultimately this was reported to the South Wales Daily News and, you know, other people started coming forward about what they had seen. And essentially, you know, it suggested that, yeah, back in 1909, some type of weird UFO craft, which appeared to be a highly advanced airship, was hanging around in the skies. But there's this high strangeness factor that's added to it, which we commonly hear in modern UFO reports, but it's not so common in obviously these very old reports. The Welsh airship flap of 1909 resulted in multitudes of men in black-like encounters, with mysterious visitors dressed in black suits and black cloaks showing up throughout the town in strange ways. Then there was even a report of a young girl, apparently. And when I say young girl, you know, like a kind of teenager. She woke up one evening in her bedroom on three successive nights to find men dressed in black standing at the end of her bed. They delivered a message to her and then disappeared. She was too terrified to relate what the message was. So it's, even though for the time, it's, you know, highly unorthodox, it's very strange, it fits in with this very consistent pattern that we now see, obviously, with the benefit of hindsight when we're talking about UFO encounters. So as you can see, Wales already has this history of strange UFO phenomenon. But why? What is it about this particular location? I mean, is it just random? Is it that, you know, it just so happens that you've got a multitude of different sightings taking place in the same area because it's a more highly populated area? Is that possible? Well, no, there's a lot of, you know, remote locations throughout Wales. There's a lot of areas that are sparsely populated. Obviously, with Kaz Clark, she lives in a semi-rural kind of area. So that's not the answer. So it has to be something else. So skip forward to 1974. And this is a incident that was known as the Welsh Roswell. And obviously, this is a very contentious kind of story. I'll link to the full details of this in the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org so you can read about this saga. But this apparently happened in the Berwyn Mountains back in January of 1974. It was approximately 8:30 p.m. on the evening of January the 23rd. And people in the quaint village that was near this particular area said that they heard an enormous boom and they felt the earth begin to shake and rattle. Now, people, when they hear an explosion like this, they go running outside and they're looking up into the night sky and they can see that there was this brilliant light, a multitude of brilliant lights that were traveling over the mountain peaks. And it was terrifying to everyone who saw it. Now, it's 1974. It's very important to highlight this, right? People know what meteorites look like. People have, even though, you know, it's like, it's not common that we see these things. If you see something like a meteorite or a shooting star in the sky, you generally know that that's a shooting star. Or you generally know that it could possibly, because even if it's material, space material, which is breaking up, it all has this shooting star kind of effect. This was something different. It was terrifying. And it was green in some circumstances. Now, following this as well, it's really important that we note this. After they'd seen something in the sky, there were reports coming through very soon of a large fire that was burning on the mountainside. This is verified, apparently, in police reports, because obviously people started calling the local authorities when they saw, you know, lights in the sky and then a fire on a hill and the strange explosion that had taken place. Obviously, people thought that something had crashed. Perhaps it was an aircraft that had crashed. I mean, at this time, no one thought that it was a UFO, but other people even claimed to have seen a bright light moving towards the west with the trail behind it that eventually became an exploding, burning rain of smoking debris falling from the sky. I mean, this is a pretty incredible report. Now, for an aircraft to break apart in the middle of the air, I mean, that's it's a rare occurrence, but maybe that's what's going on. So obviously, with the idea that this is probably a plane crash of some kind, the Royal Air Force was scrambled and deployed to this location. Now, authorities and military personnel scoured the area and claimed to have no evidence whatsoever of there being any type of plane wreckage or any indication of something crashing at all. This is despite the fact that witnesses had seen it. This, and it was a multitude of witnesses. It wasn't just a couple of drunks that had said they'd seen something. It was a multitude of witnesses from different parts of the town and different parts of the region that had seen this. So there was a local nurse called Mrs. Evans. She said that she thought obviously at first that it must be a plane crash of some kind. But once she saw the bizarre light on the side of the mountain, she wasn't entirely sure what it was at all, because she said at first the light glowed orange, then it changed to red, then it changed to yellow before it extinguished. Now, that's not like a normal fire. A fire, yes, obviously a fire can have all those colours attached to it.
It can.
But to change like that, to go from orange, then to red, then to yellow, it's all very, very strange. Now, debate for years has raged about what has happened in this particular location, but I'm setting this up because it ties in with the repeating theme that we have that occurred to Kaz, the author of, you know, this particular book that I'm going to be describing. But apparently the military was deployed to this location afterwards as well. It wasn't just the Air Force. There were other military officers that showed up in this area. There was military vehicles that seemed to cordon the area off. And then there were strange reports that were coming out from there. Now, all of this, right? You can go, okay, well, maybe it is a mistaken, you know, sighting of something, but then what could it possibly be? Well, we have our official answer, and this comes from Dr. David Clark, who was reporting on the official answer as to what took place on this evening. Listen to what he has to say occurred.
And what appears to have happened is there was a massive explosion that was heard in the Welsh valleys in North Wales. People sort of heard this and thought there'd been an air crash, and lots of people rushed outside. This is late at night, one night in January. While they were milling around in the streets and looking up in the sky, they could see all these bizarre lights flying through the sky, you know, green fireballs that were described as some of them. And of course, people linked the two things together. They called the police. The police went up on the mountain, searched, couldn't find anything. RAF Valley Mountain Rescue Team went out, flew over the area, no sign of an impact. So it was all a bit of a mystery. A couple of days later, it was confirmed that the actual explosion didn't come from the sky, it came from under the ground, because it was a mini earthquake that had been registered on the Richter scale. And bizarrely, shortly after this earthquake, there was a meteor shower. So astronomers had seen these meteors. So it was just one of those things where everything comes together and creates a UFO legend.
Does it?
Oh, there just happened to be an earthquake. And then when people went outside to see where the boom came from, there was a meteor shower as well.
Oh, what a coincidence.
It's just absurd. And this goes to what I've been describing, what I've been thinking about recently. Do they think we're absolutely stupid? And when you've got people like David Clark, who normally I'm quite impressed with his work, to go and say, oh, well, this is like, are you not listening to how absurd and ridiculous that is? There's not some weird coincidence that takes place where you have an earthquake and then you have a meteor shower that happened to take place at the same time.
It's possible. I mean, that's what a coincidence is.
Sure. But then what about the fact that you got people reporting a fire on the ground, seen by multiple people, strange military activity taking place in the area? To me, this just screams cover-up. Completely screams cover-up. Now, of course,
there just happened to be a military exercise on that same night, Aaron. Did you not see that part of the news report?
And what I'm going to be describing to you happened to Kaz Clark. She was told the same thing. Well, it was a military exercise.
There was also a fancy dress convention which had an alien theme that just so happened to be booked that weekend at that town.
Stunning coincidences, Ben. A synchronicity, if you will. Well, look, then we, of course, have the other end of the spectrum. And I was quite, I thought this was dubious, to say the least. But I have to mention it because for our Plus show coming up on Tuesday, I'm actually going to go into some of the books that this guy has written. Because you've got UFO researcher Russ Kellett. I'm thinking, where do I know this guy from? His name's familiar, but I couldn't quite think of it at first. Russ Kellett has been researching this incident for decades. And according to him, he says, look, it's definitely a UFO. And I'm convinced that there was more than one UFO involved that night. He says, all the evidence that we have uncovered over the years has consistently pointed that way. He claims that there is an alien underwater base in that area in the waters between North Wales and Liverpool. And he says there's evidence to prove that the military was up to something that day. He says that there was a military operation taking place known as Operation Photo Flash, which apparently was supposed to involve aircraft dropping, I believe was at least 80 bright flashes around the North Wales coastline. And Kellett thinks that there was something nefarious afoot because he says, well, why? Like, why would they be dropping these flashes along the sea of the North Wales coastline? It's all kind of strange. He said, I think they knew exactly what they were doing. There's a base in that region. They were trying to light up the area so they could form an attack and get the sources out. Now I'm like, okay, well, just it's a lot to jump to. There just happens to be an underwater UFO base there and that they're trying to force a UFO to come out. But it does happen that there is a document from the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency showing that the Coast Guard actually was informed of the military conducting some type of operation that evening, which was this flash operation. But the idea that it was being done to drive UFOs out, I don't necessarily buy that. And look, Kellett claims that what people actually saw was that they managed to flush three UFOs out of their lair. They shot one down with a fighter aircraft over an intense chase over the mountains, and that's what people saw in the Berwyn Mountains. And of course, immediately they deployed the military into that region to go and recover the material and pull everything out. Now, the reason why I know his name and why it came to my head is because he also claims to be a super soldier.
Oh, there
and
you
so,
go.
So Russ Kellett, who I'm going to go into some of the details about his life later on, I think it started when he was a teenager. I think that he was, I don't know his exact age, but he was a young teenager and he was going for a bike ride, whereupon he was abducted into a UFO. And when he was abducted, apparently he was placed into some tunnel room that he hadn't seen before, placed inside a dentist chair or into a dentist chair where a 15-foot alien shoved a pipe down his throat, then filled him with a liquid that they pumped into him to turn him into a super soldier. So I was like, okay, that's for another show, right? So obviously the idea that the Welsh Roswell is connected to some weird, underwater ufological base is kind of absurd. Like, I just think that's going a little bit too far, but something seemingly did happen. Something may have taken place. And for that, I want to mention a story that was reported by Tony Dodd. Tony Dodd was an excellent UFO researcher. And, I've mentioned some of his stories in the past, but he actually came forward with the details of a military whistleblower that claimed that aliens had indeed crashed in the Berwyn Mountains back in January of 1974, and he knew all about it. So Tony Dodd was a North Yorkshire police sergeant and obviously a UFO investigator. And he got in contact with this guy who claimed to be a soldier with the British Army. Now, Dodd gave him the alias of James Prescott. And he said, look, I can't reveal the details of what unit I was with or my barracks because they're still operational. But I want to tell you about what happened on this particular evening back when this, apparent Welsh Roswell took place. This is January the 23rd, 1974. The reason why I mention this case as well, this detail of this case, is because it seems to be exactly what happened to Kaz as well. This soldier claims that he was put on notice 5 days before the incident took place. Now, this is odd. Why would the military put him on notice 5 days beforehand? So this soldier claims that they have been told that they have to go to a particular location 3 days before they were moved to another location. I'll link to all the details once again in the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org. But his claim is that ultimately when they went to this Welsh village, they'd gone to this location where they'd picked up these large boxes. These wooden boxes were packed into the back of their truck. They were deployed rapidly and they had to take their cargo. They took their cargo to Porton Down. Now, when they were opened at Porton Down on the other side, he claims that inside the boxes, because these boxes were opened by the staff in his presence, were two creatures that were placed inside decontamination suits. Now, when the suits were fully opened, he says, it was obvious that these were some type of non-human creatures.
Physical description?
They were dead. They were about 5 to 6 feet tall, humanoid in shape, but he insists that they were so thin that they looked almost skeletal with just a covering of skin. He says, I also didn't see the scene of the recovery. I didn't see the craft. He was just utilized by the military unit to move these coffins, essentially, with these bodies. But he also states that later on that he met up with other elements of his group, so they must have been separated at some point. The other elements in the group informed him that they had transported bodies of alien beings to Porton Down also that were still alive. So I don't know what to make of this kind of stuff. Sadly, you know, Tony Dobb, I think he's passed away now. But also, I think when people tried to dig into this a little bit deeper, he had said that Prescott refused to reveal any more details and that Prescott, you know, had essentially disappeared. So you got to take a lot of these stories with a grain of salt. But I mentioned it because it seems to fit in with this greater narrative of the cover-up. Of a cover-up that's taking place, that there is some type of activity happening in this area that seems to be of a UFO nature, a non-human entity nature. And it's just very strange. And we're not being told the truth.
And you're saying it's still going on?
It's still going on.
This one you're about to speak about is 2016.
As recently as 2016. And it's an incredible case. I'm surprised that I didn't see this. Why I've missed this. But look, let me just start for you. So Kaz Clark, she said, I grew up in Glastonbury in Somerset, England in the 1960s. And when this event happened, it changed my life beyond anything that I ever could have imagined. She was thrown, she claims, into an alternative world, an alternative reality that makes absolutely no sense to her. But like a lot of people that look at UFO phenomena and start to question the narrative and what's going on, she says, I started to question everything because now I know that our government has lied to us. And if they're willing to lie to us about something as big as this, what else have they lied about? I always thought UFO stories were just that, stories, but they're not. So you have this sleepy town, this sleepy village, in fact, of Penturk, which is located on the western outskirts of Cardiff. And she says that the villages are kind of surrounded by rolling fields of countryside as far as the eye can see. So you've got this semi-rural kind of feel and nothing happens here. Nothing happens. The most that happens, she points out, is that you've got sheep and lambs frolicking around in the midday sun. You might have a green patchwork quilt laid out before you, and life is very tranquil and simple. However, Penturk does have this history that is bathed in mysticism. There's like this ancient idea of occult magic and this kind of stuff that she doesn't go into in great detail, but I wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's like this whole area is, you know, is rich in this kind of history. But on Tuesday, the 23rd of February in 2016, she points out that the sky was blue, the sun was shining, and the first hints of spring were in the air. But she and other neighbors noticed something that was relatively unusual for the area. They noticed this small gray twin propeller aircraft that was flying in a figure of eight over their town. It was flying extremely low and very slow. So in doing that, obviously it's creating a lot of noise. And it would kind of go in this figure of eight back and forth, back and forth.
So it did just sound like a conventional aircraft.
It was definitely a conventional aircraft. Right. And these, like what I'm describing here, these all appear to be conventional aircraft. Mm-hmm. But on Wednesday, the 24th of February in 2016, some people in the town started to make complaints because this aircraft, it was loud and annoying. And they called up the Ministry of Defense to find out why this aircraft was circling in the sky over the Penturk area. And the Ministry of Defense didn't reply. The BBC Wales Online was also notified about this nuisance aircraft, but they too ignored the email and provided no explanations. Now, I don't think that's that unusual. And maybe it's not. Like, who knows what this aircraft is? But everyone started being baffled by them because they thought maybe this was a military exercise of some kind. So they looked on, you know, local reports and local, you know, like registrars. No exercises were listed. And they were trying to identify this aircraft and they couldn't. It was definitely a military aircraft, but what it was doing there and why, no one knew. Now, later that afternoon, apparently another plane almost identical in size and color as the first aircraft arrived to take place. Now, this is what they noticed, is that these two aircraft were constantly in the sky in this odd flying pattern. And the first one wouldn't leave until the second one arrived. So it was always like there was eyes in the sky. But for what? What are they looking for?
Traffic?
Maybe?
Traffic service?
Is it traffic? What is it? No, it seems to be something more than that. And it continued all through the night. well into the next morning.
They're searching to see if people have unauthorized pools that haven't been certified by the European Union. And if you have a pool in your backyard, yeah, well, you get your tax increased.
It's probably that. Who wouldn't?
True story, by the way.
No, I believe. Yeah, it's nuts. Yeah, I mean, God, remember the pandemic when you had people walking with no one around and they sent drones out to tell people off? It's just, it's crazy. So maybe, I mean, yeah, I mean, it sounds absurd, but maybe that's all that it is. But these planes were just constantly in the air, and it was creating this continuous droning that was driving everyone nuts. And I understand that. Like, if you don't have a lot of aircraft around and you've got this slow flying aircraft.
Shut up.
Yeah, you'd be like, oh. And she says that's exactly how she felt, because for the next 3 days and nights, these two aircraft had taken it in turns to watch the sky over Penturk. One plane would arrive before the second would leave, and this occurred over and over and again. And it was becoming obvious that these planes were definitely watching for something. So it was around this time that Kaz describes that she has two neighbors. One is David and one is Donna. And they decided to try and find out exactly what was happening. And they thought between them that maybe they could go and have a bonfire of some kind and watch these things, try to see what they're doing. You know, they're obviously not going to get much information from watching them, but maybe by paying attention, they might get something, some insight as to what's occurring. And they said that on this particular evening, the flight pattern appeared to intensify, and it was over and over and just above them. Now, I don't think she's suggesting that it particularly focused in on them because they were paying attention to it, but it is odd that they focused on this area. And Kaz writes that David came over to my home around 7 p.m. that evening, and they were on the radar. So you can get on, obviously, I don't remember the exact site that she was on, but you've got like Flight 24 as an example, and there's a whole wide range of, you know, live flight data websites that you can get on. Now, they got on this this website, and what Kaz noticed was odd. Not just her region, but the entirety of Welsh airspace was empty.
Hmm?
All civilian aircraft had been diverted.
Okay, that's weird.
And there was nothing officially flying over Wales except for the fact that they could see military aircraft outside. Like, weird. And how is it that they had the power to remove this? I mean, I guess they would, though. If they're the military, then the government, they removed it from this website. So she goes back outside and she can see it in the distance. It's several miles away, but now there's at least five planes, maybe six, one after the other, flying in a big circle. It seems like it's building to some kind of crescendo. Something's happening. And while it was freezing in the garden, she lit this fire pit that she had. And at 10 p.m., it was Donna, it was Kaz, and her other neighbor, David. And they're just out in the backyard discussing and watching these planes. Now, Donna had said something along the lines, I think she started to get scared. We got the idea that it doesn't seem normal, right? You've got, maybe you can kind of build up you can kind of get yourselves worked up a little bit. But Donna's like, oh, it's so cold out here. I'll go inside and make us hot drinks, and I'll keep the hot drinks coming all night.
Mm.
But there's something that's drawing Kaz. Like, she's kind of like, oh, and she could feel this energy kind of going, not to suggest that anything was being done to her, but you know, you hear it in other ufological reports that, you know, maybe there is some type of interaction with something. There's a change in the air. And she throws this log into the fire pit and watches as the sparks from the red hot ashes kind of drift up into the air. And her face is numb with the cold, and she's beginning to lose sensation in her legs. And she turns to Dave and he's like, I think I'm going to call the night. It is too cold. And she responds and is like, yeah, I think, okay, maybe it's time to go back inside. And she's starting to look at the fire pit and about to put it out when she sees this huge plane, like this massive plane that appears out of nowhere with jet engines, and it's got this mushroom-shaped object sitting on the back of it. And David,
that's radar, right?
Yeah. David goes, what the hell is that? That's an E-3 Sentry plane. I think they're called Axis or something.
Electronic warfare plane.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's exactly, and she doesn't know anything about aircraft. Like, she knows what a small little Cessna is or a small little twin, you know, engine aircraft is. Doesn't know the name of it, but kind of knows. When you see something like that, it's foreign to her. She's like, what the hell is that doing? And David's like, yeah, it's essentially, it's some type of radar jamming kind of aircraft. And she's like, I cannot believe what I'm watching. She was watching in amazement and shock and awe, trying to see what's, and as this happens, right, She says, my heart starts pumping with excitement. And she screams, come on, Dave, come on, let's go. And they start running towards the single bright red light that had appeared high in the fields behind them. Now, I'm actually going to get Kaz to describe to you exactly what you saw, or what she saw, I'm sorry. So this actually comes from, it's so funny. I firmly believe in never throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And Project Camelot actually, and Kerry Cassidy ended up speaking with Kaz and trying to, you know, get information about, you know, what had happened on this. And I know that Project Camelot sometimes goes to sources that are a little bit wild, but they assisted in this presentation at the Awaken Aware conference in July of 2018. And I've pulled out some audio of Kaz describing what happened. Take a listen to what happened when they saw this aircraft in the sky and this red light in the distance.
And this big plane started to do circles. Now, bearing in mind, I live on top of a mountain, so I can see in every direction but north, because that's where the mountain is. And we counted as this plane started to go around, and it took about 5 minutes for this big plane to go around once. Seven times that plane went around before the first red light was visible high above the trees behind my house. And I called for Donna, one of my other neighbours who was watching with us that night, and she'd gone in to make hot chocolates. I didn't get an answer, so I shouted for Dave, and we jumped over the small little wire fence and ran to the gate that overlooked the farmland behind my house. It's literally, I could walk it in 30 seconds. So running it, we got there in 10 seconds. And this one red light turned into three. And what was starting to appear in front of us was a giant pyramid that had come in point first.
What?
On an oblique angle, with a leading set of six lights on its undercarriage, turning very slowly anti-clockwise until it righted itself in front of us. And when it did, a green object shot out of the top really fast. I couldn't tell you what shape it was. It was so bright, brighter than the moonlight. It illuminated everything. And it just stayed there, swinging backwards and forwards, rocking, waiting, watching for something. It clearly saw us.
Hear what she says there, that it clearly saw us. She's starting to fit with this theme that we hear about people that have UFO experiences, where it's like, she kind of knows it saw her. So what is this thing? To hear this triangular-shaped or pyramid-shaped UFO appear. See, she doesn't say it in the audio, but she writes in her book that she says it didn't come from outer space. It didn't come down from space. It emerged through space. It was like it was coming through a black veil. And in other interviews that I've heard her, you know, describing this incident, it literally was that. She says it was like a veil that it moved through. And you can see why I'm highlighting that as well, because it sets the scene as to what is it about this particular area? Is this a window area? Is this an interdimensional rift, which may explain why the military has been in this location, or has been monitoring this location? Why, like I said with the Roswell, the Welsh Roswell incident, that, you know, even though it was odd and obviously it's from a source that's not able to be verified, you've got Tony Dodd saying that the soldier was deployed before the incident took place. Yeah. And like what's happening to Kaz, there's aircraft that are in the air watching for something for 3 days before this event takes place.
How could they anticipate something like that, though? If this truly is some kind of alien thing, how could they anticipate it?
Is it alien, though? Is it interdimensional?
Well, it's a giant floating pyramid. Unless it's the mole people and their advanced black ops programs. I don't know what it is.
Well, how do we not know that the military hasn't got some type of technology to monitor for, you know, rifts in space-time, for example? How do we not know that, you know, with the Roswell crash, that maybe they reverse engineered something off that and they utilize it for detecting incoming aircraft or incoming craft?
Yeah, but they're using a conventional plane.
It looks conventional, but that's important, right? They've got this aircraft that's there with this, you know, incredible radar system on board. This system, I was looking into it, apparently with this aircraft, it's not just simply for monitoring everything. Like, it's got a 360 view in a sphere view of air, sea, and land. Like, it can see everything, apparently, for a very, very vast distance. It's highly classified, the actual exact details of what this thing is capable of, but it's far greater than what we could comprehend. But also, guess what else it's utilized for? Radio jamming. It's utilized for electronic warfare. And one thing that was noted that came up a little bit later in the investigations, and people saw crazy stuff that was happening this night, right? It's 2016. So surely we'll have photographs and, you know, there's plenty of people in the area, even though it's a semi kind of rural area. There'll be plenty of people with, even 2016, they've got camera phones, even though they were crappier in comparison to what they are now. Surely people would have caught stuff. There's nothing. There's nothing at all. And Gary Jones points out that it was highly likely because this jamming equipment was stuffing up people's phones. And this is what people were reporting. People were saying that their phones, which had been previously fully charged, were totally drained. Now, I don't know, I wasn't aware that, you know, radar jamming, obviously it's a different thing. Radar jamming, as far as I'm aware, not radar jamming, but electronics jamming can't drain batteries. But who knows what kind of technology they have? You know, who knows if they can send a signal to tell your phone that it doesn't have any battery or somehow interfere with it? I just don't know. But this is wild. Like, this is wild of what they're seeing, you know, this thing coming through the veil. But she points out that it's magnificent and it's majestic and it's moving silently and slowly. And it was like a giant building leaning in from somewhere else. Very poetic way to describe what she was seeing. And they both stood there watching in silence with this pyramid turning slowly in this anti-clockwise kind of direction. And it swung like a pendulum until it righted itself directly in front of them. And all these red lights were around its perimeter. And apparently there was kind of like these smaller red lights towards the top. And they were only 200 yards away from this thing that was hovering just above this tree line that was bordering the next field. Now, something apparently fired from the top of the pyramid, as she points out in that audio, something bright and green fired from the top like a cannon, exceptionally fast, and then moved over to the left-hand side into this small thicket of trees and just stopped swaying from side to side. But it wasn't that it was necessarily swaying. It seemed to be surveying everything around us, she points out, including me. She couldn't tell what shape it was because it was far too bright. In fact, it hurt her eyes to look at it. But ultimately, it resembled this bright green shining star. The E3 Sentry plane was still flying above them in this oval pattern, watching these events unfold below them as this pyramid started to move slowly backwards and it was still turning. Now, this is really cool, and I'll get Kaz to describe this as well, because as it's moving back, she starts yelling to David, oh, it's landing, it's landing. But no, it wasn't. It did something else. Take a listen.
And I exclaimed to Dave, it's landing, thinking it was coming down. When in actual fact, the field rises there because it's the foot of the Garth Mountain. And I said previously that it was like a hand of lightning that came out of it to touch the ground, but it was more like a plasma ejection trying to stop itself from touching the ground. And the whole craft lit up really, really brightly, showing it was three-dimensional and not two-dimensional. This wasn't just a string of lights. This was a solid ship that created light and shadow on its sides, like it was textured somehow, like a rock face. I heard the military planes coming, two big, heavy twin propeller planes. I think they were C-17s. And I looked up, I'm still standing on the gate as these two big planes flew over the top of me. And when I looked back, I couldn't see the pyramid anymore, but the green object was still there. Two further planes came from my left-hand side and flew above the trees, turned and went back behind the two planes that had gone previously. So now you have two planes in close and two planes out wide. And they took up an awful lot of airspace between them. And this green object flashed three really bright strobes at these planes and then started to skip away towards Llantrisant.
So I found that to be particularly intriguing because it seems like there's some type of possibly weapons fire or at least an interaction coming from this green object that's responding to the aircraft that are hurting these things. Like, they're obviously there to apply some type of pressure. Obviously, the military must be ticked off that you've got two civilians on the ground that are watching this thing. But she says in her book that when this green thing kind of took off, it was like it was pouncing like Tigger from Winnie the Pooh as it kind of just bounced off, you know, over the field and kind of disappeared. But it was running. It was running from these aircraft that were over the top that were applying this pressure. And as all this is taking place, they looked back towards the pyramid. And from the pyramid, David was mesmerized at first because he was staring at the top of it. And he says to Kaz, can you see them? Can you see them? And 15 or 20 orbs burst out from the top of the pyramid, and they seemed to be dancing and mingling with each other, but these were green and red orbs. Now, this green object that was still in the trees and had kind of, you know, moved off into the distance, She's not exactly sure how long it was there for, but her concentration was broken by this this loud roaring that was coming through, because there were these Hercules aircraft that appeared from behind the C-17s that were there as well. So they're bringing in more and more more and more aircraft to apply more and more and more pressure. So she points out that it was almost like it was deliberately drawing the planes away from the main craft. This was the green thing that was jettisoned. And in her humble opinion, it was actually acting like a deliberate decoy. And she's watching this thing with all the aircraft, you know, and everything bathed in this eerie green light, when she sees two red barrel-shaped objects appearing from the darkness right in front of them. They're about the size of a smart car, she said. Take a listen to what happens.
Just behind the trees, we could see something red moving. We didn't know what it was, but we stared. And these two red barrel-shaped objects, about the size of a small car, started moving across the fields towards us. One going from my left and stopped above the hedge about 30 feet up and 30 feet away from me, and just stopped there. And the other one was moving to my right. The one to my left, I stared at just for a few seconds because I wanted the details, and I was looking at it. I could see the insides moving like white noise on a TV screen on a red background. And I looked to see where the other one was, but that one hadn't stopped. And that was next to the oak tree, right next to me, and came over the top of me and stopped and scanned us both.
So she doesn't say in the audio there, and in this presentation, she's reluctant to describe, I think, exactly what happened, because something seemingly immensely profound happened to her,
How does she know that it scanned her?
Because so later on in the book itself, she doesn't mention this in the presentation, but she ultimately says that she developed PTSD after this, and she didn't know at the time that she had PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, right? But she says from information that she kind of, it must have come to her, or she must have realized what was going on. It was more than just being scanned, right? And in her book, she writes it this way. She says, it was like a giant hand or something reached into me and took away my fear. She was blasted with this green beam from this cylinder type object. It was like, she was overwhelmed by this. And she said, it was like I was touched by something. It was almost euphoric. Right? It was a one. Now, obviously, David is freaking out. Like, he's completely freaked out. But she says that all of her cognitive functions just ceased. I was no longer afraid. It was almost as if I was connected on a spiritual level. As it scanned me, I was feeling pure love.
There it is.
I took off my glove, unzipped my pocket, took out my phone, and the battery was completely flat. David was hitting his phone saying, this piece of garbage won't work. I looked up again and the green barrel was still there. I could see it even clearer this time with the insides moving. It was alive. It was a living thing, encapsulated but conscious and intelligent and completely benign. Now, I'm like, how is it completely benign? Because I noted that with, now it may not have been this, right?
It's just the vibe, man. It's just the vibe, right?
Well, she says later on that this incident changed her. And not only was she suffering from PTSD, you know, in that presentation of which audio I haven't included, she says something like off the top of my head that I'm ill now. Like I've been ill. I've been affected by this. Like I'm suffering from, you know, some type of medical condition as a result of being exposed to this thing. And she said it was the scan. So I'm like, well, how can the scan be benign and be wonderful if it's caused you to have PTSD? Although there could be other factors that are playing a role. But I'm like, this just kind of just hits the same notes, though, that you hear with so many other people that interact with UFO phenomenon. You know, look at the work of Leonard Stringfield. You know, he was quite convinced that this stuff, any type of interaction with UFOs, if you hit with a beam of light, it's not going to end well for you. Like it's not
No matter how much mind control you're under,
and that's what it is. And as I've said before, you know, these beings, whatever they are, these entities, these intelligences, whether they're extraterrestrial, interdimensional,
mole people,
crypto-terrestrial, mole people, I don't know. They have demonstrated a sophisticated understanding of our psychology, and that's how they are so easily capable of manipulating us to cause us to go, oh, it's so good, touch my soul and take it all. You know, it's like, I feel like, because there is this spiritual side to UFOs, you know, like you hear it quite a lot. And I can't help but feel like, well, are you being used as a power source?
You think you'd be different if you're under the influence of an alien mind control beam?
Oh, I don't know how
you would be like, I'm not going to take it.
I just think for me, I'm so cynical when it comes to this phenomenon that I'd be like, is that all you got?
You'd be like, oh, tears running down your face.
I wouldn't.
Oh, that's so amazing.
I wouldn't be like some soy boy watching a Star Wars trailer. It'd just be like, is that the best you've got? I mean, come on, give me the good stuff, please.
Yeah, I'd be like, I've read this story 1,000 times.
Give me something different. Yeah. Give me a story that I can tell on the show.
Give me some material.
Yeah. Yeah, something like
was
that.
Was this some standard abduction?
I would be like that. I'd be like, yeah, I don't want a standard abduction.
Oh, are you going to take me aboard the craft and extract my DNA? Ooh.
You're going to shove some tube down my throat? Oh, no. So going back, though, to what Kaz is describing, I can't help but feel like she's saying she's got PTSD. And I think perhaps subconsciously that's resonating in her work. I think she, because we all do this, like when you write or speak about yourself personally, no matter how much you try to control it, things leak out. That's what humans do. That's human psychology. That's just how we are. I feel like listening to her presentations today and reading this book, I'm like, as much as she's kind of approached this from this particular interaction being positive, it's damaged you. It's done something to you. It's obviously not completely positive. And in fact, what happened to her afterwards may not be, you know, anything to do directly with what occurred, but it has completely changed her life and potentially not for the better. I mean, she's obviously quite scared, and I'll get to that in a moment, but this is something as well, right? Linda Moulton Howe gets involved. And there's all this, you know, kind of the UFO network, you know how it works. When people start, you know, trying to connect with, you know, other UFO people, it kind of has this incestuous feel to it. And through all these different connections, I won't bore you with it, she ultimately gets put in contact with Linda Moulton Howe. And Linda Moulton Howe, who, you know, I love, I think she's fantastic. She's a bit out there, but it's cool. She starts talking to Kaz about her experience and asks her a few things like, oh, well, you know, what did you hear? What did you experience? Did you hear any words? And in fact, I listened to an old Coast to Coast interview from 2017 that Linda Moulton Howe presented. I'll link to it in the show notes so you can listen to it for yourself. But she interviews Kaz and says something along the lines of, oh, did you hear anything? And Kaz is like, no, she did. She did. She said, as this beam was probing her and she's connecting with this intelligence that's apparently completely benign, she hears a man's voice say, tell the world what you witnessed here. And then this green barrel just goes shoop, and then moves off to a right in silence. Now she even says in her book, right? She says in her book, I wasn't ready to tell Linda, anyone. I wasn't ready to tell anyone what happened, but she didn't tell it. And that's why it didn't get through to Linda, right? But later on, you know, David wanted to go to the field where the pyramid had jettisoned this smaller craft, but because there were other red objects around, and obviously this is a very, you know, stressful situation to be in, the planes are still flying overhead, the ground was uneven and slippery and dangerous, and they didn't have a torch. They went, oh, we're not going to do it. You know, we're just not going to go. So they get back to the house, and when they get back to the house, Donna is asleep on the sofa. And Donna kind of confesses that to Kaz. She's like, oh, well, I actually did hear you yell out my name to come out, but I was too scared, so I stayed inside. And I get that. You know, obviously it's something that's quite, you know, terrifying. But Donna says to Kaz, you both look like you've seen a ghost. And she had, you know, in this circumstance. I mean, she'd seen something that she's not able to remedy. Like, they have no understanding of what's taken place. And they're both in a state of shock and disbelief. So obviously, whatever the psychological control that they had has now passed, because they are in shock. And Kaz is goes to bed that night. Everyone, not the neighbors, go home, and they're tossing and turning, and she's tossing and turning. And as soon as she's about to fall to sleep, there's this massive explosion, like massive explosion about west of her. She says it's about 5 miles away. It's this kaboom. And in her heart, she said she knew that they had shot the green object down. And later she would go and find the impact site because she wanted to know the whole truth. Now, that's kind of implying, I'm reading between the lines, now somehow she's connected.
Yeah, why would she be that invested?
Yeah. Like, how is it? And she says, I don't know how deeply it affected me at the time, but later I found out that I was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. So this is odd, right? This is very, very odd. She went to David the following morning, and she thought, this is very, very strange. You know, surely if this is, you know, extraterrestrials, you know, what's the military doing with them? Because if they were hostile, they could have wiped us out in one go, like, and we wouldn't be here. And he's like, yeah, that's a good point. And they start finding out these other details that are coming in from the town. Like, other people were reporting seeing Apache helicopters that are flying around. Hmm. There was Chinook helicopters that were flying around.
Just so happened there was a helicopter convention in town. And it's just a coincidence.
Yeah. Oh, and it just so happens at 4:34 a.m., just 13 minutes after this enormous explosion, the Apache helicopter was forced to make an emergency landing at Cardiff International Airport with smoke pouring out of its cockpit.
Oh.
It's like, come on. This is all very, very odd circumstances. Now, she's there. What I didn't mention as well is that she looks at her clock, right? And you know what she realizes? Because Donna fell asleep in the lounge. They're actually out by an hour. She's like,
there you go.
Oh, my God. I've got an hour of missing time. Now, what's never described, right? Because I don't want to set you up for, you know, excitement here. We never find out. She never talks about what possibly happened in that hour. I don't know.
We know what happened.
Well, we know what happened. We know something happened. But standard abduction, let's just say. But I don't know if she's ever undergone regression hypnosis to find out what happened in that hour. There's no details about it. She certainly doesn't mention it in the book. But there's so many other things that are happening that it's just kind of wild. But look, to make this, you know, it's a very, very long story. And I'll link to the book in the show notes at Mysterious Universe so you can, you know, read all the details, because she goes into a great deal of, you know, information about what occurred. I just want to play you another piece of audio for you, because she ends up going to this site where she believes the explosion took place. And ultimately the way that she gets there is she goes and she sees some other people that just happen to be walking around, and she asks them questions and they start saying, yeah, we saw something odd as well. Linda Moulton Howe provides some insight as to what may have happened. Take a listen.
And there was yellow search tape tied randomly on bushes right across the common. And it wasn't really until we got to Smilog Woods that we understood what the yellow tape was about. And whilst we were up there, I saw a couple of dog walkers. And I asked Steve to pull the car over so I could go and chat to them. Bearing in mind, this is the morning after the night before. Had anybody heard anything about helicopters, explosions, you know? Anyway, I was told that Chinook helicopters were troops had landed behind the Royal Mint on Llantrisan Common, obviously, for this search. And there were two explosions. One air explosion and one secondary explosion that sounded like something hit the ground. Well, we don't know what they shot this thing with, whether or not, as Linda Moulton Howe has said, it was some kind of energy weapon. But they certainly shot at something next to a hospital, where patients were shaken in their beds, where they believed a bomb had gone off in the building. That's how violent the shaking was. They registered on the Richter scale 40 miles away.
Earthquake. Earthquake and meteorite.
There it is.
Yep, there it is.
We've solved the case.
That's the end of the show. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. No, I'm just kidding. See, there's a lot more going on here. And, you know, this is 2016. It's starting to coincide with the same kind of area, the same pattern that's being set up with the military intervening, you know, and why this case is just so impressive and why I really like this book and the level of effort that Kaz has gone to in describing this is that she starts getting information from, you know, freedom of information sources. She gets it from people that are witnesses in the town, obviously. She gets it from people that were working at the hospital. And because she ends up meeting up with Linda Moulton Howe and appearing on Coast to Coast, other people from the town came forward and reported their experiences. Some people wanted to remain anonymous, but she did get connections with, like, a nurse who was at the hospital. The nurse reported that on that particular evening when they heard this explosion, that the entirety of the hospital was filled with a sulfurous smoke. Like, it was sulfurous. Again, that sulfur
that smell
that comes
again
up in these things. And it was all through the hospital, so much so that it was coming through the vents.
Hmm.
So this is all very strange. Now, what we understand is, yeah, Linda Moulton Howe has suggested that maybe they shot something down with an energy weapon. And maybe they did, you know. And I'll get to Linda. We'll come back to Linda's theory on what possibly has occurred here. But obviously, you know, it's something strange. It's something very odd, and there does seem to be a precedence of this stuff happening in the area. But more of this story in the second half of this book focuses on Kaz's experiences following the incident and the fact that she really was, in a way, gaslit by possibly the military, the government. This is what they seem to do to people that are involved in this field. Now, I've seen a lot of people that claim to be, UFO experiences and researchers. And there's a lot of crackpots out there. There's a lot of nut jobs. But she seems to be quite genuine. She seems to be very, very open and honest for the most part. If she's ever, I don't think she's lying, but I think she may hold back in some circumstances because something obviously incredible has happened to her. But very quickly after this took place, the local media, it was like the Wales Online or the Mirror Online, published an article the next day about, you know, the sound of explosions and fighter jets over the village and how so many villagers were terrified when they awoke to the sounds of explosions in the sky and people seeing helicopters flying at very low altitudes for hours. Obviously, this is getting a lot of attention in the area. So she starts reading it and she's like, this whole thing's a lie. Like the whole thing's a lie. It's already got a narrative built into it.
Yeah, right.
Trying. And so she's reading comments and she starts replying to the comments, right? And look, it could just be trolls. And there's obviously plenty of trolls out there. But she says, as she's replying to the comments, she's very insistent. She's like, I was here. I saw exactly what happened. She goes into great detail describing in this post exactly what I've just told you. You know, an incredible experience. When all of a sudden, these two people show up. One is called, I think, Deep Throat or the Smoking Man. Obviously a reference to the X-Files. The second guy is Fox Mulder. And they start trashing her and start... And now... She's finding this all to be very upsetting because, yes, it could be trolls, but it seems like it was a couple of people or maybe one person that was monitoring the forum to discourage her.
Why, what makes her think that?
It's just what comes through from her and her experience with this, right? Now, to add to this, though, is that following...
Where is she posting this stuff? Is it Facebook?
No, this is the Mirror Online. So this is a...
Well then...
Yeah, so it could be that, right? Except afterwards, she claims that everything was removed. She says it's all gone now. Like all the comments, everything that was there, it's all gone. And later on, she describes it, and other people, she mentions a guy, Steve, there. So you've got her neighbors, David and Donna, but there's her friend, Steve, who gets involved in this as well. They all go out to this site. Later in the book, she describes that their Facebook accounts were hacked into, that they had messages deleted.
More convincing than just comments being wiped from mainstream media.
She said that her laptop was hacked into remotely. Which obviously, you know, it's a very difficult thing to do, but it's you can do it if you have sophisticated enough technology. She even said, I don't know if it was Steve or David, but they did take photos, right? Because they went up into this field where allegedly the impact site was. What they found up there was quite odd because she mentions that yellow tape, right? She claims that when they went up there, they saw all this yellow tape in kind of like a grid pattern, like someone had been searching for something.
Really?
Like a fine tooth comb.
That's interesting.
Trying to get stuff. Now, it doesn't end there.
So they went to the trouble of cleaning it all up, but they left all their tape there?
Yeah, it's a bit strange, but maybe because she interrupted, maybe they interrupted, or maybe they just don't care. Like maybe no one's going to, as long as they get the material, who cares if they leave the tape behind, right? Like it's no, tape isn't proof of anything. She claims, and I don't recall if it was Steve or David or someone else, but they took photographs of this. All the photographs were taken from their laptop one day. And he was really annoyed because there were photographs of his newborn child or his son. And oddly enough, he was like bitching to Kaz about it or something. The baby photos came back or the kid photos came back, but none of the other photos came back. It's weird. It's like,
that's weird.
Is it like, are they psychologically messing with them? Does that mean that they're showing that they're listening to them? I mean, what could this possibly be? Like, surely if you're a spook, you're not going to go and pull all these photos off and then just go, oh, well, I better return the kid photos.
Yeah, you wouldn't remove them. You would just copy them and then remove the ones that you need to remove.
Exactly. Yeah.
Why would you remove them?
Exactly. So, you know, all this kind of stuff took place. But when they went up into the field, there were a few things that were quite strange. So they go into the field and they're expecting to see burn marks on the ground, but there weren't any. Like there's no burn marks on the ground, but there was something else that was very, very off about this area. So first of all, the bushes in the spot where that hand of lightning, you know, that plasma ejection of the pyramid was kind of like stabilizing it. She claims that all that grass and trees and bushes and shrubs in that area, they weren't burnt, but that all had the life sucked out of them. They were all brown and dead, but all droopy. It's like the energy, the life force was drowned.
You hear that all the time with the sites where these craft have gotten close to.
Yeah.
Trees are dying, the grass is dying, nothing grows there for years.
Exactly. They get to this other, well, later on, actually, they went back, I think about 20 months later, where they had people from the Swansea UFO group go in. And where that hand of plasma had touched, it kind of left like this perfect circle, right? So everything else around it is like, they call it snake grass. It's kind of like a weedy kind of grass. And that was all growing wild and fine. But there was this perfect patch, like almost a circle of this green kind of grass that was out of sorts. And this was in this location where this stuff had been. It was just the opposite of what you used to expect. But when they went to the site, something else was happening. She said that she could stand at this perimeter, right? And I've seen this with the rain. Like, it happens here quite frequently in Australia that, you know, you can be at the front of your house and it's raining and then you step out the back and it's dry. Like, it's, that happens all the time. She says, though, that she was standing right at the face of this very odd snow that was falling the following day in the site, but it wasn't snow. It was like, I think Steve described it as being like plastic that was falling. She said it was like a spongy, odd material that was falling.
Weird.
And there was massive amounts of it, and they caught it on film. And in fact, that YouTube video from Project Camelot that I'll put in the show notes from the Awake and Aware conference, towards the end of it, you actually have Gary showing this footage. It's poorly shot, but it's almost like this horizontal, and you can hear it. It's like hail almost, but it's like a plastic, or there's like a heaviness to it.
Well, it just so happens once every 30 years, there's a rare plant in Wales that blooms and it gives off a very, and it just so happened that that day that plant was blooming and everyone saw it and got it on film. It's coincidence.
It's just insane. It really is just insane.
So were there
insane.
More reports of, you know, strange men in black type characters? Did she get a visit from the Air Force or anything like that?
Not in the way that you'd expect, right? So, okay, let's skip forward to what happened. And I'll try to make this, you know, as concise as possible. So, you know, obviously something crazy has taken place and she's trying to comprehend it and try to understand it. You know, one thing that happened as well when they're in that field, when Donna was there, Donna was like walking when all of a sudden she stopped, like she hit something. And Kaz is like, are you okay? Like, it starts yelling out to her. And she's like, I need help. I can't move. And they're like, oh, what do you mean? Like, she had literally run into some type of weird invisible wall, right? And she couldn't move past it. She was motionless. She was paralyzed by something. And as soon as they got near to her, then she was kind of returned to this normality. But even the air around them was like warm. The air was warm in this location, even though there was this snow falling. It's all got this odd activity taking place. Like, there's something that's not right. So skipping forward, you know, and hearing about the Chinook helicopters, they were looking at the trees, right? So in this area where, because there was like two locations, there was another location that they'd moved to where they thought something else had taken place. But they find these trees, these 60-foot trees, and they're snapped off. Like, they're snapped off at the middle. Now, even with the highest, most intense winds, which you don't really get there, you can't snap a tree off in the middle. Like, the tree will fall over. Mm. There were other trees that were kind of like almost bent at right angles, but they hadn't been broken. It's just surreal kind of thing. There was all this weird kind of scorching up in the middle of the trees, not down the bottom. It was in the middle, and it was like an oxidation as well that was described as being seen in the trees. The theory is, and a long story short, is that whatever they shot down, it crashed into this area, right? But rather than hitting the ground, it got lodged in the trees. And they deployed these Chinook helicopters, three of them, to go in and lift this thing out. And that's how they got this craft out. And they somehow, you know, strapped it up and pulled this craft out on this helicopter and took it somewhere. And they suggest that that's why you've got these broken trees, but also the trees that are kind of bent and curled outwards. Because it would have been caused by, the only way that you could cause this was by an immense heat of some kind that was coming. So all of this is just inconsistent with any type of real explainable phenomena. Like, anything that's explainable just does not explain why the trees were like this, why the debris trail had stretched out in the way that it was. They followed the debris trail later on, like 20 months later, when they got the Swansea UFO group involved. They took out EMF meters. And when they took these meters out, they found that this trail 20 months later, you know, I've got to really emphasize that the levels were skyrocketing. Apparently, like 0.4 of whatever it is on the scale is dangerous. Like, if you're in anything above 0.4 for an extended period of time is dangerous to your health. They were getting 1.
Oh, that's bad.
It doesn't seem like it's bad, but it is. Like, that's really, really bad. And it was getting higher and higher and higher as they followed this trail of where it looks like it was first shot down to where it was obviously had crashed or had settled and then was pulled out later on. So, you know, waking up, this is the next thing, right? So they make this plan to go back and get their cameras and film more of the debris field and the impact and try and find the impact crater. We get to Saturday, the 27th of February, 2016. And Cass says, I wake up in the morning, I have a massive shock. My hair has turned completely white overnight.
Oh, weird.
Completely white. She's like, oh, but I rather liked it, so I didn't do it. I'm like, are you kidding me, lady?
Yeah, that's a bad sign. That means your energy's been completely drained.
And it's consistent with what's happened to all the foliage and all the plants that are in this area. There's something very odd going here. And lady, you were just scanned. You know, you were just shot with some type of beam. You've got an hour of missing time. Something was messing with your psychology. You think this is a good thing? There's something bad that's happening here.
You went there, Aaron. You didn't feel the love.
No, I didn't. You know, and
tell people what happened.
Yeah. So we don't, the problem is, like, and I don't want to rag on this book because I think her story is amazing. I believe her and what she's saying for the most part. Obviously, I've got an air of skepticism, but the rest of the book, it contains a lot of just FOAI reports. That's all it is. But she did. She got stonewalled. Like at every single turn, every type of information she tried to pull out, whether it was from the police, the military, the government, lie after lie after lie after lie. And she's like, I can prove every single one of them is a lie. And she can. Like the data, the information she provides is like, yeah, they're lying. She catches them out on their lies. And in fact, I'll put a photograph in the show notes that I've included from her book. She shows this planefinder.net, that's the website that she uses, and she shows one of these aircraft, right? The aircraft is doing so many circles around this particular location, it looks like it's filled the entire screen with this kind of pink donut for how much it's got. You know how you normally just see a line?
Yeah, with the flight trackers, you can see what they're doing.
It's so, so heavy. So yeah, I mean, with the hospital, you've got staff members that are working that night that are reporting to Linda Moulton Howe, and that's how, you know, she got involved. But look, to kind of summarize this, what ultimately happens is that she tries to get in contact with Welsh UFO network groups, and she's put in contact with Richard Hall. And Richard Hall just happens to be doing a presentation in a local town or not too far away. So she goes to see him. And when she goes to see him, she takes Steve along with her. And Richard Hall isn't ultimately that helpful. It's like he's fascinated. Even while he's doing his presentation, like he hands the mic to Kaz and says, please get up and tell your story about what happened. But it's about what happened outside this that makes it kind of weird, because she says that while she was standing at the bar, there was this muscular man standing at the end of the bar, like right at the opposite end of the bar, but he was staring directly at her. And she's like, oh, that's kind of odd. And she looks up and then she does this kind of glancing look. Because you know, when you think someone's looking at you, you don't want to kind of make eye contact and make it weird. But she's looking, she's like, she says to Steve, this guy, like he's still staring at me. And Steve's response is something like, oh, well, maybe he's trying to get, you know, the attention of Richard Hall or something. She looks over and she's like, no, he's just like piercing her eyes is what she said when she looked at him. And she's a bit freaked out, right? She's really, really freaked out. And the guy kind of disappears. Now, later on, she happens to be at this conference. And there are people that are, you know, psychically inclined. And this is before she'd gotten up and told her story. This woman comes up to her and she's like, oh, my God, there's lightning coming from your body. She's like, what do you mean? She's like, I can see there's lightning. There's lightning. It's coming out of you. And then she tells this woman this story. She's like, well, that's why. Like, you caught it from this UFO. So no other details are really, unless I missed it, no other details.
Like an STD, can you pass it on?
Yeah, maybe.
Let's get around.
Like that, maybe. It's very, very odd. I mean, we do talk about the contagious nature of, you know, paranormal phenomena. So I'm thinking maybe that's what's going on. Maybe people that have a second sight or are psychically inclined can kind of see this stuff. But look, she, again, like she finds out things where she talks to the police and sorry. Another woman says to her that she was actually driving home that evening. And when she was driving home, she couldn't get home because every road she tried to travel into this area was covered by uniformed police officers. Mm. And every single time, these uniformed police officers said to her, oh, a big lorry has tipped over. But she's like, well, there's not a big lorry tipping over on every single road. Just, oh, nope, that's it, yep. Again, there's things that don't make sense. And more lies and, you know, more subterfuge and things that aren't quite right.
Is she the only person that's really spoken about this apart from Linda Howe?
You've got Gary as well, Gary Jones, who has spoken about this quite a lot because Gary Jones was the one doing the EMF meter research. Mm-hmm. But as she was driving home from this conference with Steve, there's no other roads. You know, sorry, there's no other cars on the road. But Steve's like, oh, geez, this guy's flying. And they look in their rear vision mirror and there's this car, this large sedan with its high beams on flying towards them. And he's like, he's going to slam into it. And they did. They started bracing for impact because they thought that this car was going to slam into them.
Oh, boy.
Now, Steve does this kind of quick maneuver where he slams on the brakes and spins the car around, you know, TV show style, and happens to get off the road just as they miss this car. This was either intimidation or deliberately trying to kill them because possibly what she knows. And, you know, the hospital, right? She goes to the hospital to try to get CCTV footage. It just so happens that evening that the CCTV footage wasn't working that night.
Another coincidence.
All the cameras aren't working. You know, like, this is just strange. It's not good.
We live in a world of lies, Aaron.
Yeah, so then...
Truth isn't to be found anywhere.
It's not. So then later on, like, because she's got these connections, you know, she's a little bit concerned about, you know, some strange people trying to meet up with her. But she doesn't know who they are. And she gets a lot of people meeting her and saying, oh, look, I want to, you know, I want to come to the site. Can you take me to the site? And she does meet up with this one particular guy. And he was clearly lying about who he was. Like, he said that he was like a workman of some kind, describing working with some type of, you know, materials that would cause his hands to be calloused. Like, it's just a typical kind of thing. But she looks at his hands and she's like, his fingernails are manicured. He's clean shaven. He speaks in this sophisticated British accent, but he claims he comes from Bristol. Like, it's just nothing's consistent, right? This is the first thing. She takes him out to the site and everything's fine. Like, he's just a bit odd. Like, there's nothing that happens. And I think that this was deliberately done to make her lower her guard. Because at the moment, she's got this thing where she's like, oh, I'm going to meet. And she did. She met him in the hospital because Steve goes to her, well, David, you know, if we meet in the hospital, there's cameras everywhere. So, you know, we'll be safe. And everything seems to be fine. But later on, she gets this contact. I don't know if it's a phone call or some other contact where this guy is like, oh, look, I'd really like to come out to the site. You know, can you take me out there? And because her guard, I think, has been lowered a bit, she's like, yeah, sure. She was still reluctant to, but she does. This guy rocks up, right? And she doesn't say it's the same guy. And I don't even think she realizes it herself, but she says this incredibly muscular, clean-shaven, 60s jarhead crew cut kind of guy shows up, claiming to be a guy that's interested in, you know, amateur UFO research. And I'm like, are you serious?
Whenever I go to a UFO conference, that is really the type. Is 6'4",
yeah.
Built. Spends a lot of time in the gym,
yeah.
Like shaved,
jarhead
haircut you can set a clock to, very sharp.
Yeah.
That's the average person that you see at a UFO conference.
Obviously, she's very new to all this, but she said that there's something that's uncomfortable about this guy. Now, I should point out, right, she actually said that right in following all this taking place, she has this problem where these campers arrive. And all these campers start camping at the back of her property.
Mm.
And she goes up to them and she realizes very quickly that they're not campers. Like, and she's trying to like take photographs and these military men start showing up and harassing her, right? So there's a bunch of military men that are like, oh, this is private property. You can't be here. She's like, I live here. This is a footpath. This is public space. Like, oh, no, you have to go. And then, so later on, she runs into more of them and she realizes that there's like accommodation tents. Then there's a canteen tent. Then there's like some type of equipment tent. It's like, they're making it actually quite obvious. And she realizes in the distance, she looks and there's people wearing Tyvek forensic suits down on their hands and knees going through the grass. This is the back of the property where this stuff had taken place. Guess what? People come up to her and go, oh, we're from Vodafone. And she's like, there are people with laptops everywhere, weird scanning equipment, antennas, satellite dishes.
Yeah, they were rolling out 5G. Just so happened that there was a test of 5G towers in the area day.
Yeah.
It was a coincidence.
It's a weird coincidence, you know, just after apparently a UFO has been shot down. She says ultimately, like, this man that's kind of harassing her, this military man, he kind of just walks off back to the camp like a schoolboy who's just told off. And the following morning, the campsite's just gone. Like they got the hell out of there. So it's like she's being messed with, but skipping back to, you know, this muscular man that had showed up, he's like, oh, take me to the site. So he takes her to the site and she takes him to the site.
Take me to the site.
Yeah. And he starts saying things of like, he walks like directly into it. And she's like, oh,
is he melting your mouth gorgeous?
Oh, apparently. And she's like, oh, here's where this took place. And he's not even looking. Like he's holding the meter and he's pretending to be like a UFO researcher. She's like, but if you're a UFO researcher, you'd be using like, you're not holding it properly. It's like he wasn't even holding the EMF properly.
I know what I'm doing. This is how we do it in UFO school.
He kind of just drops it. And he turns around and he says, so what do you want?
Do the voice.
What do you want? And she's like, what do you mean? What do I want? I just want the truth to be told. And he's like, the truth can make you disappear. And starts threatening her, essentially. Like, he starts just and she's terrified. Like, and she points out.
Now it's getting hot.
Yeah. She thinks that she's going to get smashed in the back of the head or, you know, he's going to beat the hell out of her.
All sorts of fantasies.
Well, it just so happens that she was with, you know, one of the guys that she'd been with. I don't know if it was David or Steve, but, you know, he's 6'2" or something. So he steps in and she's very, very threatening. Like he's so threatening. And she kind of says like, well, I don't care because I'm living on borrowed time anyway. He's like, what do you mean? And she says, the craft made me ill. And she said, it suddenly occurred to me how extremely vulnerable I was. I sensed that he was wanting to harm me or threatened me, but I continued. And she says, it doesn't really matter what happens to me. And it was almost like this guy was kind of like, he didn't know what to do because, you know, once you've got nothing left to lose, well, then you don't care, do you? And he goes, you know that 5 people were recently killed in a car accident. Accidents happen all the time. And it was Steve. Sorry, I've got it here in my notes. So Steve steps in. He's like, back off. And essentially they get
sound the same.
Yeah, essentially they get into this kind of, you know, like this macho thing, and he goes. But clearly this was an intimidation. Like this was obvious. It's not a man in black in the traditional sense, but it is a man in black in this UFO silence.
It's intimidating, yeah.
He's an intimidator. And now, of course, you know, this is where she was describing that she was kind of betrayed by another UFO researcher. I think it was Emlyn. And he had initially told her at the very beginning of this, look, I'm just interested in UFOs and I just want to keep it for my personal files. And he was the one that kind of blew the lid on it to everyone. And this is why it got out the way that it did. And that's when Carrie Cassidy got involved and Linda Moulton Howe got involved. And, you know, it was around this time that she presented her case at the Awaken Aware conference, which is what I just, you know, played for you there, which I'll link to also in the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org. But okay, where is all of this going, right? There's something else that's going on here, and I think it could be one of two things. Linda Moulton Howe has one theory. On the Coast to Coast presentation or interview, she says that, look, I've got other insiders. I've spoken to other people in the military field that have mentioned what's occurring here. There's a secret Earth war that's going on between the humans and the extraterrestrials, and this may have been an example of that. But take a listen to what Linda describes from the inside sources she received from the military.
It was the 1980s, and it was somebody I met from Idaho. And it was a similar report about how roads were blocked off in the Sawtooth National Forest northeast of Mountain Home Air Base. But the person talking to me was in the military at the time and told me he had firsthand knowledge that a silver disc, maybe 30 to 50 feet in diameter, had come down or crashed into a creek area, and that he was in a military group sent to block off as many roads as possible to the site. And that the cover story to the news media and the public was there had been a large tanker truck overturned. But he told me firsthand what had happened. And I've tried to find other people who might know about that incident as well. Where did that UFO go? How was it transported out of the mountainous woods and to where? And then also back in the late 1980s, I was first introduced to the concept, the words, Earth Secret War, by an Army intelligence whistleblower who told me he had been in a very high-level meeting back east on one of the corridors around Washington, D.C., with some real scientists, some pretend scientists, meaning that they were from the alphabet soup, spying on each other and pretending to be scientists, a real general, and a couple of pretend officers, also alphabet soup spies. But he was impressed and disturbed by the discussion with a real scientist in the room because the subject was UFOs and genetic manipulation and hybridization. He told me back then he did not fully understand the conversation or the implications, but when the meeting was over and they were heading out the door, he overheard the general ask one of the real scientists, quote, well, how do you think Earth's secret war is going? And he said, the scientist answered, I think it's futile. Well, maybe what happened in Wales is a signal that whatever conflicts human military are having, humans are not backing down. And in fact, in Luntrecent and Smilog Wood, which is there at Luntrecent, it would seem that something violent happened in the land and the trees, and that Chinook helicopters might have lifted out an object.
So you can hear the modus operandi there. It's exactly the same. You've got Linda claiming that she's heard from an American resource that when another crash took place in America, that the military people that were deployed to the location told people that it was an overturned tanker.
It's like they've got a procedure to follow. You know, they do it by the book. It's the same way every time.
That's exactly what it is. There seems to be some type of procedure. Now, the other possibility, because it might be a combination of the two, I don't know, but you heard Linda there describing this Earth's secret war that we seem to be losing. And maybe, you know, that's what's occurring. But the other thing, or the other side of the coin to this, is something that Kaz looked into, is that they conducted all these investigations and they wanted to look at it from as many angles as possible, which is a great idea. You know, you've got this, you know, kind of very varied and, you know, broad approach to investigating this. They got a bunch of dowsers and crystal workers in.
Now, getting desperate.
And now, in doing so. But, well, because you got to remember right at the start of the show how I was describing that she said it came through a veil, like it was interdimensional of some kind. This is what's going on potentially in this area, because they said that in doing this on closer inspection, they found that there are two major energy lines that run directly through the location of where the pyramid appeared. There's also three key ley lines that converge right into that Penturk area. And that might be a possibility for explaining why there's been all this strange activity going on. On top of that, they also found an energy line that apparently connected back directly to Stonehenge. And I looked into it a little bit deeper. There's some modern reporting that suggests the stones for Stonehenge were actually quarried from Wales, meaning that there's something about the material and this particular location.
They floated them along the lays using levitation powers.
Yeah. So, look, very unusual stuff. But in a way, I'm quite rejuvenated about the ufological phenomena, because I feel like it hasn't died down. And I feel like what we're being
told... Why are you happy that it hasn't died down? It needs to die down.
No, it hasn't. I think it's actually intensifying, and I think we're being distracted. I think we're...
I'm saying it needs to die. You don't want it to accelerate.
No,
I want it to go away.
No, I want it to accelerate. Because I want to know what's going on.
Your whole argument is that it's bad. You want it to go away and leave us alone.
No, that's never going to happen.
Let human beings be human beings.
That is, I do want human beings to be human beings, but I want to know the truth. I want to know what's going on. And I can tell you right now, you know, do not trust the military, the government, whatever they're doing when feeding us this chicken feed of, oh, look, there's a tic-tac UFO, and we're fighting between ourselves and there's all this crap going on. It's because we're being distracted from something greater. It's a freaking circus going on, and the clowns have been sent out to distract us. There's something else happening. And look, I'll link to all of this in the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org.
Good stuff.
Thank you.
Wasn't expecting a UFO mystery.
No, neither was I. I'm happy with it.
Coming up after the break for our Plus members, we're going to adventure into the weirdness of Wales. My stuff is in Wales as well.
Great.
Where we're going to encounter reincarnated English gods, giants, apporting swords and gems and strange tulpas and...
I get it. We're in.
It's bizarre. It's the sequel to the sequel of The Green Stone, coming up after the break on Plus. If you want to get on Plus, head to mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. You know the drill. Sign up today. You get access to the big extensions we do on every single one of these episodes. And of course, Plus members get their exclusive show every single Tuesday as well. You're getting more than double the content when you sign up. Plus members also get a higher quality MP3 rate for the show, a better quality audio version of the show, a totally ad-free version of the show as well. And if you sign up for our MU Max tier, you get access to all the shows we've got in our back catalogue. Make sure you check out the store as well, mysteriousuniverse.org.
No, it's store.mysteriousuniverse.org.
That's what I said. Stop correcting me.
store.mysteriousuniverse.org. We've got a whole range of new items that we've just launched.
Yeah.
The Mies mugs, the Aleister Crowley mugs, are going very nicely at the moment. They're quite a hot object.
Some new posters.
Yeah, some new
All
posters
of them
in there.
Are
new tees.
Penciled by us. We handcrafted every single one of those.
Well, technically we did. So make sure you check them out. Even if you just want to have a look. Go and have a look. Store.mysteriousuniverse.org.
Aleister Crowley in a horrible drag is the best seller currently. It's actually catching up to the Bigfoot.
It is.
The Bigfoot
it's
lamps.
It's catching up to the Bigfoot lamps. It's wild. It's only been up for 24 hours. I deliberately made those mugs in a way as well so that our logo's on the outside, but on the inside of the mug, every time you take a sip, you get this face full of Aleister Crowley and drag. It's like, meh. Every sip.
Make sure you check it out and sign up for Plus. Help support your favourite show. That's a wrap for this free edition of MU. Thanks for listening. If you're on Plus, we'll see you after the break for all the good stuff. See you then. Welcome back to your Plus extension. Great.